This is where we hold them! This is where we fight!
Now listening to Sweep the Rack Podcast featuring Brooklyn Rob and Big Mike.
Rob, what's good, homie?
Yes, sir. Another Sunday night. Let's go. Sweep the Rack. Ready. We got a big show tonight planned.
Yeah, but you know what? It ain't let's I mean, we got a goat in the building tonight. All right, so I'm not downplaying the show tonight, but no PBA bowling this week. So that means no rundown, no betting review, no, you know. So, like, listen, I'm happy we're getting back to bowling next week. All right. I hope these guys have all enjoyed their little vacation. I hope they all got their time in at home and did what they needed to do. Back to the bowling action, please.
Let's go. You, man, if it was up to you, you wouldn't give these guys a break. You'd be a wheelchair.
Absolutely not. Absolutely. I texted a well-known professional bowler this week, and we were discussing these shows over the weekend, which I'm not sure we'll get to tonight, but we'll touch on them at some point in the near future. But we were talking about the shows over the weekend, and I was making the point, unsurprisingly, that, you know, I would much rather see a couple more small events than these particular shows that they put on over the weekend. And I told the person I was talking to, I said, son, I was just getting hot at the books, and then they go and take a 2.5 week break. Like I was on fire at the books. Okay. I was on fire at the books, and then they go and take a 2.5 week break. But listen, I'm happy that the bowling action is coming back. Happy that, you know, things are going to be back in swing. So
a little bittersweet for me though, Mike, next weekend. You know, I was signed up to bowl the Masters. And then the bicep injury, which I have some people reaching out to me about, is doing well. I have no pain, zero pain the last 2 months. So it's hard for me not to pick up a bowling ball prematurely, honestly. So I plan on probably waiting another month, May. But yeah, I'll be there actually at the Masters Friday to watch the match play. I will be in Vegas Thursday, though, but my bro's got a... We're going to a pool party, man. You know how it goes. Oh, we're here in Vegas together.
Well, I was going to ask, are you going anyway? Like, are you going to watch the bowling at all?
Friday, I'll be there for match play. I'll be probably texting you to put some bets in for me while I'm there betting live.
Okay.
So I'll be rooting for people. I probably,
we're going to be, listen, Peacock's in the tournament, bro. Peacock's are back in the tournament, baby. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So, listen, the Peacocks are playing Tennessee on Thursday. I'm massive deposit going in my gambling account this week.
Yeah. So I'll be hitting you up. I'll be talking to some people, see what's going on, how the shot looks, who looks good. And then, yeah, I'll be putting some bets in Friday. And then, yeah, like my only plans really to stay for Sunday for the show will be if Bill makes the show.
Okay.
If Bill makes the show, I'll definitely stay. If not, then I'll probably leave. But, or you know, who knows? I know there's a couple people like Dan McClellan's bowling the Masters.
Oh yeah,
I mean, yo, like, okay, you know, Dan makes a show. I'm out the stage, so yeah, you never know.
It's a name from the past. Dak in the chat asking if Bet Rivers had action on Mike Albee winning the Strike Fest. No, it was all taped, so no action on any of that.
Dude, we would have bet on it, dude. If I was there live, I would have bet on it if I could.
Yeah, no doubt, Carl Long. What's good? Saw you on the show there, Carl, hanging out. What's good? Yeah, no league review tonight, Rob. Wife had parent-teacher conferences this week, so I was home with the kiddos on Tuesday night doing my thing. So no league review this week. The people will be really interested to hear what I'm going to say next. next Saturday, I'm bowling a 9-game county tournament all on house. Okay.
God. Okay. We're gonna have to take bets on what you shoot for 9 years.
I had a friend. There's two people in my life right now, two bowling buddies of mine, who if they ask me to bowl on house, I'll bowl on house just because it's them and I want to bowl. I like bowling with them. Other than that, probably ain't going to happen. But this guy asked me to bowl a little county event, singles, doubles, team on Saturday. So
I got one of those like city tournaments.
Yeah. It's county tournament.
Sandbaggers. It's Sandbaggers extravaganza.
It's Mamma Mia Central. Dude, it's Mamma Mia Central, bro.
I'll tell a quick little story before we bring on EJ. I bowled a city tournament years ago, and I booked at like 205 that season because I bowled on a sport league that wasn't sanctioned as a sport pattern league. So they brought me in at 205. I averaged like 233 or 4 for the 9 games and wasn't even in the top 5 with a 205 book. Okay. And averaged 230. I had an average, I guess, like 270 something, like with handicap or something like absolutely insane in order to like win those. Like it's sandbagging extravaganza there. So get ready for it.
Yeah, so I'm just going to bowl for the day, have a good time.
Yeah, have a good time, man. Have some beers.
We're gonna go out. We're bowling, I think, singles and doubles, and there's a break. We're bowling team later on, so we'll probably go out, grab some lunch, have a day of it. So it'll be cool. So you know, everybody can stay tuned for next week. You know, I'll have a lengthy league report, not only from the sport league, but also from my experience of bowling in the county tournament over the weekend. So all right, Rob. Enough delay. We got a goat in the building, and it's actually his first time coming on the show, which is somewhat remarkable. So let's bring him on. None other than EJ Tackett.
What's up, guys?
Goat, future goat. How's it going?
Hey, it's going great. It's going great.
I'm sure it is. You've been off for 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, I tell you what, man. It's been a lot of bowling this year. A lot of bowling, so I was very much looking forward to this little break that they had built in for us.
Are you first sleeping? Topic. Yeah, first topic. Sleeping? How's the family? How's the new baby?
He's awesome. Trip he's the best. He actually sleeps really well. A lot of people don't like me because every time we talk to somebody and we're like, oh yeah, we put him down at 11 or 12, and he sleeps for 8 or 9 hours almost every night, at least most nights. And everybody's like, what? Like, I don't know what to tell you. He's like the best baby ever. I don't know. I think it has a lot more to do with Natalie than me, for sure.
Okay. And when you're home in these, in a break like this, give our people an impression of how deeply involved in the dad stuff you are. You know, are you changing diapers? Are you?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you're deeply involved.
I'm feeding him and changing diapers, and yeah, Natalie still works. She works from home. She gets up much earlier than I do though. So she takes care of him in the morning. And then, I try to get some things done around the house. I still bowl league a couple nights a week. But I'm not afraid to take over and, change some diapers and feed them for sure.
You bowl league?
I know. What's it like bowling with EJ in league? What are you?
Well,
what
you know,
shooting league, EJ. What are you averaging? Now I'm curious here.
I think this year, actually, I'm averaging higher than I have ever this year. I think it's because I bowled less games, but I think I'm averaging somewhere around 240. But it's not because I bowl, big sets. It's mostly because I bowl 723 every week.
Could you imagine you get up to bowl, Mike, your league, right? You get up Tuesday night. It's random league night. You kiss your wife, goodbye. You go to the bowling center, and then you're matched up against EJ. Like,
talking about for the people that bowl in LA, it's got to be cool. I mean, to me, that would be really cool.
Well,
that would be like an awesome experience.
My parents own a bowling center, and they've owned a bowling center for 25 years. So
a
lot of the people, we're in a different bowling center now than we have been. We've only been in this one for 6 years. And me and my brother are actually going to take over this summer. My parents are ready to retire and take it easy a little bit. So a lot of the people that I bowl league with, I've either known for the last 6 years in the bowling center we're at, or it's people that I've literally known since I was 4 or 5 years old. So it's not really that weird for them or me, because it's just like a normal, I bowl league Monday and Wednesday, and it's just a normal Monday or normal Wednesday for them and me, just because I've known them for so long. So it's not really weird at all. I've been subbing in the league on Thursday nights with one of my buddies, and I bowled there this past Thursday. It's actually MVP lanes in Fort Wayne, and I've bowled probably. I would say I've probably bowled 7 times up there, and Thursday night I bowled my third 800 out of the 7 weeks accidentally. Yeah.
So just to ask about something you commented on there, your family owned the bowling center for over 20 years, but it's not the center you guys own now.
Right. So the center we're at now in Bluffton, and my parents took over in 2018.
Okay.
Before that, we were in Huntington, where I grew up, and my parents had owned that from 98 till 2018.
Okay, and did they sell the other place? They're no longer involved in the first place?
Yeah, the other place actually doesn't even exist anymore. Okay. There was a group out of, I think, Noblesville down around Indy that they just wanted the land. The land was worth way more than the business just because of where it was. It's across the street from Walmart, right on a highway that runs through town. And they tore it down and built a Starbucks and a Verizon store. Ugh. So
sad. So, I mean, it's a common story, right? I'm not surprised at all to hear you say that. So that's cool. So was there a period where they weren't in the bowling business, or was it a transition right from one to the other?
It was a transition right from one to the other.
Okay.
So they had sold the one business, or the first bowling center. Like the talk started in late 2017. And at the end of the league season, the 17-18 season was it for that bowling center. And then they took over in June of 2018, the other place. So there was like a month lapse between the two.
Okay. All right. That's interesting. I mean, I know a lot of professional bowlers out there have a history in the bowling business, right? Families that are in the bowling business, bowling center owners. So interesting that you have that similarity as well. So you grew up in the bowling center then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely spent more time in the bowling center than I have in my own home.
Okay, because the first thing that I wanted to ask you about is basically like, have you always been a bowling prodigy? Right. And I phrase it that way because of this. First time I ever saw you throw a bowling ball was a Carolier. I think it was the U.S. Open, the year that you made the top 24. Did you make the the top 24?
2011. Open,
right? Yeah. And how old were you then?
I was a senior in high school then.
Okay. Yeah. And
I was 18.
I was just like, crazy. I mean, I was blown away. I said, this is just, I'd never seen anything like that. While your game was good, it wasn't the type of game that I looked and it wasn't like watching Belmo Bowl for the first time. Mm. You know, there wasn't anything there that was like, wow, just blew me away about your game. But man, just your performance and your poise, watching you throughout that week and watching, you know, how you dealt with things and the matches, and kept a close eye on you throughout that week, throughout the match play that week. Just super impressive, right? So yeah, I guess that would be my question. Like, have you always just been really good at bowling? Your game is so interesting. Like, how did you develop the game that you have? Did you have a teacher, a coach? Was there a certain point where something clicked? Because I'll be honest with you, like, for a guy who's so slim and, you know, in stature, etc.
I thought you were talking about you.
I'm talking about him. If there's any person where if artificial intelligence at some point in the future allows us to put something on that would allow our body to move in the same way as another person who throws a bowling ball in a certain way, he's the guy who I would want to see. What does it feel like to throw the ball the way he does? Because the power that's generated, the way you throw it, you know, in combination with your stature, et cetera. I mean, it's not like he's built like Rudy Revs. You know what I'm saying? Like, when I heard about Rudy Revs and then I saw him for the first time, it made perfect sense. I was like, oh yeah, no doubt he throws it like that. It doesn't add up here. So how'd you develop your game?
Yeah, so my dad has been my coach my entire life. I've never really worked with anyone else. Obviously, I've been on Team USA and talk to Mark Baker and, you know, all the people that have been involved with Team USA, Brian O'Keefe. But I've never really worked with anyone else other than my dad. At a young age, I used to actually throw the ball two-handed from my chest like this because I was so little. I couldn't hold on the bowling ball. And I got to about 6 or 7 years old, and Dad said, okay, enough of that. I'm going to drill you a ball. You're going to bowl one-handed because that's what you're supposed to do. I said, okay. And my dad kind of just taught me fundamentals of bowling and then sent me out on my own and said, you need to go figure out how to bowl your way. So, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old, this is right around 2000. And you have guys like, you know, Pete was huge at the time. And then Tommy came out not long after that. So those are kind of the guys that I really watched because they hooked it. So I'm like, I want to do that. So I just went out the bowl. I had free access. I could bowl as much as I wanted. So I just went out on lanes and figured out how to bowl. And to your question, Mike, this is how I bowl. Everything that I do, nothing was ever taught. It was all just doing it and figuring out how to make the ball hook and to create power from such a small stature. I think playing golf growing up absolutely helped that, because I had to figure out how to generate speed, right, from a golf swing. And I think some of that bled over into bowling. And then there's things I do in bowling that I think bled over into golf too. There's so many similarities between the two. And I think growing up playing both of those really helped develop what I do to a bowling ball. And the crazy thing is, you know, people ask me all the time, how do you do that? I'm like, I don't know. That's just how I bowl. And this is what's developed. And as I grew up, like I said, my dad was my coach. He never changed what I did. All he did was make minor tweaks to make it better. And I'm very grateful for that, because everything that I do now just feels so natural. Like I'm so much on the other side of technical. I don't even know what technical is. I'm such a feel player. I just go out and bowl and do what I see is in front of me and make adjustments based off of that. And it's all 100% feel when I'm doing all these things. So, you know, like I said, people ask me all the time, how you do it. And I'm like, I don't, this is just what I do. I don't know what to tell you, to be honest.
Okay. So I'm going to follow up to that, EJ, because I know a lot of people probably wondering like, well, what can they do, right? If they're an everyday league bowler, right? Or if they're once a tournament a month kind of bowler and they're looking to get to like the next level, and you were to give one piece of advice, right? And I know it's hard because like, hey, this is how I do it and this is how I've always done it. And I don't really know how I do it. I just do it kind of thing. But if you were, and I'm sure you get asked this a lot, but I would really like to give a good piece of advice to bowlers that are looking to like, get really good at their game. What would you like to tell them?
Yeah. What were some of the fundamentals that your dad focused on with you that got you in a position to kind of to go and develop your own game, like you said?
Yeah. I mean, all the fundamentals, it's just basic bowling fundamentals, you know, learning, okay, you got to get your steps in time. You got to get your swing in time. You know, you got to be balanced at the line, all just basic stuff that we all know. Right. So it wasn't anything crazy that my dad taught me that everyone else that's a teacher doesn't already know. But as far as you, Rob, with your question of what we could tell someone, I do a lot of clinics. Sean Rash does tons of clinics throughout the year. I've done several with him over the years. I always tell everybody to be the best versions of themselves, because no one else can do it better than you. Because people are always trying to be like someone else. Like Mike, you want to bowl like me. Rob, you want to bowl like me. Or Bill, you're not Bill O'Neill. You're not me. You're Mike and you're Rob. It's figuring out how to be the best version of yourself and not trying to be like someone else.
Mm. Well, I've done the worst version of myself. So I... I agree with that. No offense to Bill, but I'd rather bowl like you, EJ, than Bill. I'm just saying. I'd rather throw messengers at the 10 like every other shot than Bill flat 10-ing.
Hey, look, there's two commonalities between the both of them. We both win major championships. And that's what matters at the end of the day.
Well, speaking of majors, I'm glad you brought that up because this is a good transition for me. There's one major you haven't won yet. And I know what you've won the TOC, right? Mm-hmm. You won the Players.
Mm-hmm. No.
You never won the Players?
I lost the bill by one pin, Rob.
Oh, damn it. I thought I had a good – I was doing my research. See, people, where's Virgles now? I was going to get on top of me for not knowing my shit. Okay, so two majors you haven't won, but the Masters is coming up next week, right? Yeah. How hard of a major is that to win compared to the other majors because of the format? And, you know, is this a tournament that is kind of on your radar where you're like, I want this before my career is over?
Well, yeah, I mean, I want to win the Super Slam, obviously. So I need to win the Players and I need to win the Masters. I've always said that the Masters is the easiest and hardest major to win. It's the easiest because if you get a good draw, it's really easy to make the show. But it's hard if you get a bad draw. Like last year, I didn't have a very good draw. I think my lowest set I bowled last year was 680, and I was out in four rounds. And I bowled 700 two of those times, and those were both my losses. So it's like, what are you supposed to do? So that's why I've always said it's literally the easiest and hardest major to win.
So is that safe to say in where these best of seven formats that we love so much as fans because we love betting on them, we love the excitement of the matches, is that safe to say a bowler of your level isn't a huge fan of the best of seven formats because it is more luck of the draw than it is skill? And I'm not just saying skill, but I mean, you know what I mean. It's more draw than it is anything.
You're asking this of a guy who leads like half of the events,
more than half, I think.
Of course his answer is going to be no here. I mean, if it was up to him, they'd bowl total pinfall all the way through the last game of the event, and he'd probably have double the titles he has now, which is sick because he has a shitload of titles already. So, I mean, come on. I mean, like, if anything – the other guys are happy that they're bowling those of it because you know what? I do like the match play format, but here's what I like about the other situation is that you would constantly see the same names over and over and over and over and over again on TV. And somebody like EJ would become a much easier player to market full time, right? When you don't have the randomness of some of the other guys making the shows, right? You go those longer formats, guys like EJ, Belmo, Simo, Beer Bills, they're probably going to climb to the top way more often than not, right? And that they become easier to market. People are seeing them more. They're on the shows more regularly. The other formats, yeah, you're going to get a little bit of randomness. But, yeah, I mean, clearly, you know, we understand. You don't even have to answer that question.
So EJ doesn't have to answer. Okay, I'm glad I brought Mike in for the interview.
Just tell Rob I'm right.
You're not wrong, Mike.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. So interesting to me that over the last 10 plus years, right, as two-handed bowling has really hit the scene heavy. There's been a lot of talk from a lot of bowlers, and I can mention names, but there's been a lot of talk from a lot of bowlers about, oh, one-handed bowling is dead. You can only win if you're a two-hander. Oh, they're setting the environments up for the two-handers. They want to see the two-handers on TV, blah, blah, blah. And in that environment, you have been extremely dominant. And, you know, I know that your rev rate compares to a two-hander, so some people are going to argue that. But you still put your thumb in the ball. So what has your mindset been with that conversation going on in the background?
My mindset is I don't give a shit. Honestly. Whether you throw it with one hand, two hands, no hands, use your feet, I don't care. Because it comes down to can you make the shot or not? And that's what bowling is all about. Can you make the shot when you need to make the shot? Don't care how you do it. There's a million different ways to bowl. And I think that comes from just being a golfer and watching golf my whole life. There's no one swing that's the best swing is the one that gets the hole or gets the ball in the hole the fastest. That's the best one. So in my opinion, in bowling, it's who can knock down the pins in the least amount of shots. That's all it is. And I don't really care how you do it. And I think, you know, as time has gone on and people have gotten so caught up with the two-handed stuff, I think it's played to my benefit because I just don't care. You know, I go out and focus on what I'm going to do instead of focus on what a two-hander's doing. Don't care. I just go bowl and try to bowl the best that I can.
Mike, EJ had my mentality when I was like 16. I wish I could have carried that mentality. Like put you in front of me. I don't care. I'm going to steamroll you. That's really what the mentality is and should be. That's the killer mentality, Mike. I mean, really, like put you in front of me. I don't care how you throw it. You could kick it, whatever. Like I'm steamrolling you. That's bottom line. So
it's funny. Well, I mean, in conversations that I've had with bowlers who, you know, who are of that mindset, you know, of all the two handers, I say the same thing. I'm like, listen, if you're worrying about them, you already lost. You know, you should really be worried about what you need to do to surpass them. You know, whatever that is. Maybe it's not rev rate, but you know, to make better shots, to repeat the shot better, whatever it may be. But yeah, I mean, I just know for a fact that there's, and I'm not going to say it's a large contingent, but that there's definitely a group of people on tour who have been on and off tour over the past decade or so who have been of that mindset of like, oh, this is just, you know, it's a two-handers world now. And I watch guys like EJ, I watch guys like Bill, you know, and I say, no, I mean, if that's the way you're looking at it, I feel like you're looking at it incorrectly because you got at least those two guys. And I could probably give you a few more examples as well who are one-handed and are still competing at the absolute highest level that you can possibly compete at out there. So definitely something that I wanted to ask about. Tell me if I'm wrong here.
You're wrong.
Okay. That Larry Bird, right? They called Larry Bird the Hick from French Lick. Yes, that was the nickname they had for Larry Bird. Are you just a country boy who's good at shit? Is that who you are? Because, like, I've heard you're really good at golf. Obviously, you're great at bowling. Look at this guy. Look at this. I'm right. I am right. Like, I picture you riding around on the tractor all day, working your ass off on the farm. Do you live on a farm?
I don't have a farm, but I have 3.5 acres. So
that's a farm. Where I'm from, that's
not
a farm.
It sounds like you hit him on the head, Mike, because Nally's agreeing.
Listen. I don't live on a farm because I'm surrounded by hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of acres of actual farmland. So where I live, 3.5 acres is just, you know, a good piece of land that you don't have to deal with neighbors. It's not a lot of land where I'm from, but it's enough to keep you busy.
Okay, well, tell me a piece of equipment you own. What's an impressive piece of equipment you own that me and Rob have probably never used,
never heard of,
but you use on a regular basis?
I've got 100% have one. I have a diesel 72-inch John Deere mower.
Mike would like that for us. You got a big backyard, Mike, in New Jersey.
I have a ride on John Deere, son. Don't underestimate your boy over here. Well, it ain't a diesel 72-inch, but
well, I have another one that's probably more your speed. I got a little 48-incher that I use to mow the Finston area for the dogs. But it's also a John Deere, so I'm looking for the old John Deere sponsorship here.
Listen, I mean, I didn't know shit about shit with farming equipment, but when I needed a ride on mower, John Deere was, boy. I said, those country boys, they buy those John Deere's. I'm going to go get myself a John Deere. So that's what I did.
Now your new favorite color is John Deere green, ain't it?
It is. Never given me a problem either. It's a good piece of equipment, I have to say. But all right, no, like, I don't want to stereotype, you know, but I did want to ask because that's how you strike me as the kind of guy who is out working hard all day, probably cracking a beer at the end of the day, going to the bowling alley, getting his 3-6 games in. It's just interesting to me. I often, you know, I think about like the lives that some of the players that I don't know. I mean, I don't know you personally. And I think about, man, I wonder what, because I know what Bill's like outside the bowling alley. And I know what other guys are like outside the bowling alley. And I think to myself, man, I wonder what that guy's like outside the bowling alley. And I sometimes come up with my own my own viewpoint of what people are like. So I'm glad to hear I was at least in the ballpark on that one. That's
good. Well, I definitely ain't no city boy. That's for sure.
Okay. All right. No doubt.
We're complete opposites. He even made fun of me at the PBA All-Star because I pronounce golf like a New Yorker.
Your hair gave it away.
You're from.
Because people where I'm from have hairlines like this because they wear hats all day.
No doubt. No doubt. So you're busy, man. Got the new baby. You got the wife who's working. You got the house to take care of. You got the bowling center that your family owns. I know you're involved in the pro shop business with Ronnie a little bit too, no? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have four shops.
Oh my God. Like, where you find the time, bro?
What time?
Man, you must keep it moving.
Dude, we got and we got him on the show for like 45 minutes. So
we must have caught him on the one day where he's got a free 2 hours. Oh my God.
Well, that's just because I haven't sent the bill over yet.
All right.
Look at that.
Send that to Rob. Just make sure you send that to
Don't worry, I'll take care of it.
All right. So last year, dominant. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the most dominant seasons we've ever seen as fans of professional bowling, right? You had Simo, who had the dominant season that he had, who in any other season, without you doing what you did last year, would have been looked at as a historical season, right? And you even topped that in the same season. As a fan, just want to say it was awesome to watch that back and forth throughout the season last season. Prior to last season, despite your resume, you had had a lot of instances on TV where you had struggles, right? Mm-hmm. Last year, the biggest difference that I noticed was that you were just shutting the door. You were just getting the job done. I mean, when you needed one and you got up there, you were acing that shit. And then this year, it seems that you have reverted back a little bit, and there's been some hiccups again this year, right? Now, I have to preface my question by saying this. Bill O'Neill thinks I'm a dope, and he's probably right because he's right about most things in bowling. But he thinks I'm a dope because I look at situations like this and I say, well, this player, right, whether it's you, whether it's some other players who have had these struggles on TV from time to time, they're just not getting the job done. And he says to me, his retort to me is, no, you're a dope. You don't understand that how hard it is to put yourself in a position that many times that those things can occur and you can still win as much as these guys do. And I understand that aspect of it. But my question to you with that said is, what are you thinking about in terms of some of these struggles you've had on TV? Because last year was so dominant, this year not so much, previous years, yes, at times, others not. Was there a difference last year? Was there something different you were focusing on or doing? And do you have a thought about how to get back to that dominance of closing the door every time you got an opportunity?
Well, it's a very loaded question. Last year, things finally went in the direction for me. I think the reason, honestly, and it's going to sound really weird to you, the reason last year happened is because the one shot I threw at the US Open to win. If I don't strike where over the course of my career, that shot I threw against Kyle where I got the little bump 10, that never has happened for me. That is always just 10 pin. I throughout my career, I've thrown a lot of really good shots that just didn't strike. So this year, there's been a couple of times against Kyle at the US Open, I had a chance. I was doing so many different things to make my ball strike. I threw a bad shot. That's on me. Nothing else I can do. I just say, hey, that's on me. I threw a bad shot. Had an opportunity. Oops. In Missouri against Simo, the right lane was impossible. And I got up on the left lane and forced Simo to do what he did. Simo threw the first shot I thought was dead aced off his hand. And it struck. The second shot was okay. I thought it was a little bit in, and I thought I was sitting right behind him, and just I watched him throw every shot on that lane. To me personally, I thought he was going to two pin on that shot, and it struck. So that's just maybe a little bit of bad luck on for me, but at least I forced my opponent to get up and actually throw two strikes to win. So I don't count that as a loss. You know, that's just, you know, I got beat kind of thing. And then the same thing happened in Delaware where I threw one bad shot the whole game in the eighth frame. All I did, I hit up on it. If you go back and watch the show, the ball was perfectly on line to my previous shot on that lane. I just hit up on it and it overhooked. And then I leave the blower seven on the left lane that doesn't force Tim to double. And then the two shots before that on the left lane were ring 10 and ring 10. So I look at this year. Yeah, I've had a couple of instances where I could have thrown a little bit better shot. Okay. But I've also had a couple of instances that I forced my opponent to do something and they did. What are you going to do then? Right. So at the US Open, I honestly feel like if I would have beat Kyle, I probably would have won because Balmo bowled 150 and Simo only bowled 180. I was feeling pretty good, and I thought if I got past, I mean, Kyle obviously won and bowled really well, but if you look back at it, you know, that match decided who won the US Open, in my opinion.
Yeah,
and then
at the time we felt that way too, yeah.
And then even in Missouri as well, when Simo got up and doubled against me, Bill only bowled 150. So if I beat Simo, I also win there. And if I do well, one of those things I controlled and the other one I didn't. But if the things go my way, now I'm sitting here with another major and another title. And now me and Kyle both have a major and a title. This conversation this whole year can be completely different. And last year, I feel like that's how it went. Everything went in my direction. The pins fell my way. Throughout my whole career, I've thrown a lot of really good shots that just never struck that cost me from winning. And when you make the show so many times, that's going to happen. You know, the good breaks are going to happen. The bad breaks are going to happen. And I've always gone through my career as if I continue to put myself in position to be able to win, I'm going to go up and down the ebb and flow. There's going to be bad stuff that happens to me. There's going to be bad stuff that happens because of me. And there's going to be good stuff that happens to me and for me because of what I'm doing. You just have to take it all together. You know, I look at it as a grand scheme. I've been very fortunate in my career to be where I'm at. I don't regret anything. I'm always giving 110% every time I step on the lanes. Sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. I mean, and there's just nothing you can do about it. And like Bill said, it's really hard to win because there's been so many people, myself included, over the years that lead tournaments by 200, 300, 400, 500 pins. I beat everyone by two games over 40 games or whatever the games were. And now I got to bowl one game. I beat you by 400, but because you beat me by 12 in that one game, you win the title. Mm. So that's what makes it so hard. I've actually looked back through, if there wasn't the TV portion, I think my title count would be actually about the same, plus or minus a couple, but my major count would be at 10 instead of 4. That's the number that I look at.
That's interesting.
So that's where the biggest difference is.
Okay. So
that's what we do. That's the hand that we're dealt, and that's what we have to deal with. There's no excuses. I just gotta, you know, I have to go out and just perform the best that I can and hope that at the end of the game, I have a chance to win or I forced my opponent to do something to beat me. And that's all I can ask for.
So
am I wrong? I love your answer there. Am I wrong in summing up your answer to say that you sort of just go with the flow of winning and losing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I heard there. Right. Yeah. And I hear you on that. I definitely hear you on that. I mean, I think
Mike, I've literally lost 90% of my life. I have to know how to lose.
Right.
I think I'm probably less than 10%. I think I'm probably 7 or 8% winning. So 92% of the time I lose.
I've lost about 99% of my life, EJ. So I mean, I'm about 1% on the wins.
Yeah, no, yeah. I totally understand that, and I think that it's easy for for people, armchair quarterbacks, so to speak,
like us, like
Rob and myself, yeah, to sit and pick apart shots and break things down and criticize. And I totally understand where you're coming from. As a fan, somebody who's in this podcast thing, something that we got to ask about, because like I said, last year watching you, and I agree with you, you could look at it and say, well, the brakes just went my way, but yeah, it, as a fan watching, it seemed like, wow, this guy has really come out this year and said, no, you ain't getting me. He ain't doing it this time. Like, I'm winning. I'm here to win. And when I got to get up and throw this shot, I'm going to throw this shot. But I feel you on that. So we ain't going to see a copy of this on with you on the show. Am I correct?
No, mind Jim.
No.
All right, we're throwing it out. Get out of here with this.
But just so you know, EJ, usually pros who come on our show start getting some luck on the next shows that they make. And I'm being honest with you. So I kind of feel like with St. Paddy's Day, today, and some luck being on the show.
Hey, where's y'all's green at?
Oh, I see. That's the thing. It's I wear green all the time because I'm a Jets fan, and my closet is filled with Jets green. So hey,
you could have fooled me.
I being from New York and not even being close to Irish, I feel like if I wear green on St. Paddy's Day, like it's a complete a fugazi, you know what I mean?
Well, I had to go. We have a brewery in town. Even though I live in a small town, we do have a brewery. So we went there before I got on here. They one of my favorite beers that I've ever had, they brew, and they haven't had it on their tap for like a year and a half. And they finally got it back on Friday. So me and Natalie and a couple of our friends went into town. We're actually... they do a membership there. Me and Natalie are lifetime members of the brewery. So we had to go grab a couple Parlor City Pale Ales before we got on the broadcast tonight.
I like
nice,
it.
Nice. Put the plug out there. listen, we appreciate the time, man. We appreciate you coming on for sure. We don't want to keep you here forever, so we're gonna wrap it up. But first time on the show, let's not make it the last time on the show. Definitely come back sometime again. We can get you on here. But before we let you go, please tell our people, your sponsors, who's supporting you out there when you're doing your thing.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I have a laundry list. I mean, I'm very grateful for everyone that comes on board that I'm able to be an affiliate with and support everything that they do. Obviously Motive, the first one. I've been with them for, October, I think it'd be 12 years I've been with Motive. So it's the only ball I've ever thrown as a professional. So
face of Motive, man. No doubt.
Venom Shock.
I'm very, face very
Venom Shock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, historically, that company will be associated with you, and you will be associated with that company like Parker Petraglia are with Brunswick. Okay. Or like a Weber or Duke is with Storm. Like it's not an exaggeration at all. I mean, this is just factual. And if you're talking about the Venom Shock, yeah, if you want to associate a bowling ball to a player, then that's the ball we're going to associate to EJ. The same way you might associate
a black UDOT with Ferrara.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, Jay Ferrara. I'm telling you, we could bring back all of the red UDOT with Marshall Holman, black Rhino with Mark Roth. Oh, I can go.
I was going to go Danger Zone Walter Ray.
Okay.
Is like a big association.
Or Parker.
Parker too. You're right. So yeah I think Parker. Man, what a job you've done of representing that company and putting them on the map.
Yeah, and I always told I told Brett when the Venom Shot came out, which it's actually turning 10 years old in a month.
Look at that. Happy birthday.
And I made my first major show, which was at Carolier, the Masters 10 years ago. So I mean, hopefully I can make the show again because it's kind of fitting if I did, but I told him a couple of years into the Venom Shock being out, I said, hey, if you guys ever discontinue this ball, you can just rip up my contract.
Ooh.
That's why it's been around so long.
Well, luckily for me, it's been a great consistent seller. Actually, the Pink Venom just got released, and then the Venom Shock sold out on back order. So,
the top five. You know,
Hey, I've got four shops, so I see this stuff too. Venom Shocks are on back order right now. So, that ball still sells. It's one of the best balls ever made, and I know you guys, and I think every company could say that. I mean, when a ball's been around for that long, there's a reason for it.
Yeah, we put on the Mount Rushmore of bowling balls.
No top question. Five.
Yep.
Yeah, especially over the last decade, for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, people who don't know that I stink at bowling come and ask me, what ball do you think I should drill? And they'll be like, should I drill this new ball or that new ball? And I look in their bag, and they don't have any of the goats. They don't have any of the goat balls that are out there. And the Venom Shock is one of the first ones I say to them and say, well, I notice you don't have a mode of Venom Shock. If you haven't drilled that yet, that's first on your list. And then I say, you got an IQ Tour? Okay, that should be second on your list. But yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I'll continue. We'll get past Motive and the old, I call it the Blurple ball because it's not really purple. So it's a little bit of blue and purple. So the old Blurple ball. Turbo, I've been with for, I think, 6 years now. I've been with Turbo. Creating the difference with Ron Hickland. I've been with Ron for 3 or 4 years, but we go way back. Ron's from Marion, about 30 minutes from where I grew up. Same place Ronnie Russell grew up. All of our dads bowled pot games and Russian roulettes and all kinds of stuff back in the 90s together. Ronnie remembers when I was about 3 or 4 years old running around the bowling center. And so does Ron Hickland. And it's a great partnership that I have with him and glad to be around him. Genesis, I've been with for, I think we're getting close to 10 years. I've been with Genesis. It's been a long time with them. Dexter, obviously number one shoes in bowling, have been for a very long time. And,
Bowler X.
And
I'll give
a very vague small teaser, but later this year, and there's probably some people that know about it already because I know at Bowler X there was an email that came out, but there will be a new shoe coming out from Dexter this year. So just a little teaser for everybody.
Is EJ getting his own line of shoes?
Hey, I can't say anything.
Just a guess. Maybe I hit it.
But there will be a new shoe coming out later this year. And it's not super public yet, but I know there has been emails sent out because Natalie got it at Bowler X. So we will see.
People might be waiting in line at 5 a.m. for the new EJs. You know, not the MJs, the EJs, you know.
Yeah, hey. Hey, any J, right? And then this year I signed back with H5G with Cassie and them over there. I signed quite a long contract, signed a 5-year deal with them. I'm super happy to be back with them this year. Let's see who else we got.
Maybe John Deere in the future, right? Maybe
I hope John Deere. All right. Arnicare is some homeopathic products. They got some roll-on type stuff, arthritis, pain relief. They got a whole plethora of products. So if you want to go check out Arnicare, they do great. Actually, I carry it with me all the time. They have like allergy stuff. They have, if you have cold, flu, they have all kinds of homeopathic stuff that you can buy over the counter. But I carry some roll-on, you know, stuff for muscles with me, and it definitely helps. I use it throughout the season because I bowl in so many games. I got to have something to help me out. Who else we got? Victory Bowlers, Chris Turner down in Texas. He's been a great supporter of mine. He's such a great guy. And then Tony Stewart has been a good sponsor for a few years. Both me and Sean, he sponsors. So shout out to him. And then Midway Lanes in New York, up there in Binghamton. Kyle and I do some stuff with them, and so happy to have them as a sponsor. Steve Miller, he does such a great job for his league bowlers up there. It's better than anything I've ever seen. I've been to a lot of bowling centers throughout the world and the country, and Steve does a wonderful job doing stuff for his league bowlers up there. He brings a bunch of pros in every year, has a huge party. He spends tens of thousands of dollars up there to do stuff for his league bowlers. So shout out to him. I think that's it.
Got it all.
Let me think about it. Let's see. Motive, Turbo, Creating the Difference, Dexter, Genesis, H5G, Bowler X, Arnicare, Tony Stewart, Victory Bowlers, Midway Lanes, and how about our Pro Shops RT Tour Experience? We got four of those.
Hey,
we got one All-Star Bar, All-Star Bowl in Indy, Pinheads and Fishers, Muncie Lanes in Muncie, and then we have one in Montana in Big Fork, actually at Rhino Pages Bowling Center at Grizzly Lanes out there in Montana. So, and then our bowling center here, Easy Bowl in Bluffton. And I think we might have got them all. I told you it was going to take up half the show, Mike.
You did.
The man has checks coming in from everywhere.
Dude.
It's just raining checks.
It's amazing, though.
No, it is. Great. It's great. Not only do I give him credit for being able to make that happen for himself, because you know a lot of these guys don't have agents and people out there representing them. You know, it's them doing it on their own. So, number one, shout to you. But it's great to see people supporting professional bowlers that way, right? Even before we came on, I said I wish every player had a laundry list of sponsors that were backing them up and making it easier for them to do what they do. So shout to you. Not surprising. I mean, listen, the kid is one of the best to ever do it already, and he's still got a long career ahead of him. We enjoy watching you, man. We really do. As fans of the game, super, super awesome to watch your career kind of blossom from the start and you know, you take it to the places that you've taken it. So as a fan of bowling, as a person who represents the fans of bowling, thank you for that. It's been incredible to watch. Safe travels, good bowling the rest of the season. And can we let Bill don't catch fire, all right? Just don't catch fire. we need a player of the year. We need a player of the year for our boy. All right.
Well, how am I supposed to get to seven without winning more?
Next year. Like,
no, every
come
year,
on, Mike. Come on. He's not in the lead going into the second half, but he's right there. I'm worried about you. I am, because if you catch fire, that's gonna take up at least three titles in the second half of the year. We can't really have that. We're gonna need at least one of those, maybe even a big one. So, you know, just
hey. Now listen, I would love to see Bill win a player of the year. I think Bill is unbelievable. I love watching him bowl. Obviously, he came out, you know, right when I was in high school. So I loved watching Bill bowl. The first U.S. Open I ever bowled was in 2010 in Indianapolis, the one that Bill won. I've always been a huge Bill O'Neill fan. I love Bill to death. He's actually one of the two bowlers that's better than me in my household. So if you ask my agent, Rob, which is Natalie.
That's what I said. I said, hey, yeah. I said to EJ at the PB All-Star, hey, you want to come on the show? He's like, you got to reach out to my agent. I'm like, all right, you have an agent? And then I thought about it. I'm like, oh, your wife. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, listen.
Your wife. And she delivered.
Shout to her, too. Saw she won in the out-of-state Masters. Shout to her. I mean, she's doing
her thing. Well, the queen. She won the queens.
Yeah.
She. I mean, it was unbelievable. She hadn't really bowled. She had the baby. I'm just a very small part in playing of that, but she really didn't bowl much after like October. You know, he was growing and getting bigger, and she started you know, having a little bit of problems with her hips just from her body changing of the baby growing, and she's like, hey, I just don't want to bowl anymore. I don't want to hurt myself. You know, it's not like she's bowling on tour or anything. There was no need for her to go out there and hurt herself bowling. So she decided to take some time off after October. And she really didn't start bowling again at all until, I would say, probably middle end of January. So she hadn't bowled but maybe 30 games before that. In the last 4 months, maybe 50 games. She hasn't bowled much at all. So the fact that she was able to go out and do that, I don't know if you guys saw it. I don't know if I put it out on Twitter or Instagram or something of her winning. I hashtagged it Supermom because who else can do that, right?
No doubt. Super bowler, too. Super yeah. bowler, obviously. I mean, you know, to take that kind of break and come out and win an event like that, you know, super impressive. But yeah, she has the background. We all know that. I mean, again, like I feel like as long as I've been following you as a bowler, I've been reading her name in various press releases from the USBC and collegiate bowling and things of this nature, too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, bowling family for sure. No question. Maybe like the biggest power couple in bowling. Ooh. Yeah, I mean, that's some serious accomplishments.
I mean, there's definitely some good ones out there for sure. And we actually talked about, you know, how they did the I don't remember what they called it, but where like Ronnie and Caden and Guppy and Kyle and
the generations, Ryan,
whatever show that they did. We were like, hey, why don't they do a like a couples version of that? Because that would be kind of cool. You know, I have Chris and Linda, and you could have BJ Moore and Tania. And I think, did Christy bowled right too?
Yeah, she won a national championship in college.
Yeah, Bill and Christy, me and Natalie, and even Ronnie's wife, Michelle, she bowled too.
Oh,
and still does. So
Sean chiming in.
I got a good one.
He's got a wife that can
play
too.
There you go.
I got a good one. How about the O'Keefes, Brian and Shannon? Okay.
Yeah. Well,
was Brian not bowl anymore?
Well, I mean, Brian never really bowled on tour.
No, but he could still. I'm sure he could probably still slow hook it with the best of them. My guy could hook it from left gutter to right gutter, but I like it. Tom Clark, if you're listening.
I thought it would be. You know, they did the generational thing. I thought, you know, maybe hey, let's do a couples one. That would be kind of fun.
That would be cool.
You know, get eight couples together and bowl some matches and just have a great time.
No doubt. Like We're here giving them ideas too. But listen, EJ, we appreciate all the time, man. As I said, thank you again. Safe travels, good bowling the rest of the season, and we'll be watching, man.
Yep.
Thank you guys. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, EJ.
Have a good one.
Yep. See ya.
Rob, always, I mean, this is why we do this.
Yeah,
I love talking. Like, for me and you, this is why we do this, you know, like, to have a, you know, when it's all said and done, he's going to be amongst the greats ever, right? I mean, I don't think that's a stretch to say that. To have him on the show for the first time.
So much stuff, though, I could have got into. I mean, we could have had him on for 3 hours.
Oh, you know? Oh my God. I mean, like, that's one thing I miss about the old way we used to do the show. Like, when we first started out, that's all it was, right? Our show was pretty much just one long-form interview with one player every show, right? But those interviews, some of them were an hour and a half, 2 hours in some instances. So, we kind of switched things up, and we're not doing things that way anymore. But, yeah, just interesting. Interesting to hear his background. Interesting to hear his thoughts on how things have gone for him the last couple of years. The highlight to me was hearing about how he developed as a bowler, right? I mean, you know, I think there's valuable advice there.
Right? It is. Well, you know, it's interesting, and we didn't get a chance to talk about his brother, right? Because his brother's a really good bowler in his own right. But like, you look at me and my brothers, how we bowl, we all have similar styles, right? His brother is very similar to him in his style and the way their approaches and their swing. So you could just see it. It's just like you have a father who coaches, right? And you watch your brother, or he's watching you, and you develop the similar styles as your brothers, right? Because you're watching him. Me as the youngest brother, two older brothers who bowled, you watch them and you want to like imitate them, right? So, you know, we didn't get a chance to get into that, but we'll have EJ back on.
That fundamental base.
Right.
Right, that fundamental base. And like, I think that gets lost in bowling sometimes, especially in the modern game with two-handed and rev rate, and, you know, fundamental base, man. I mean, that's what made me great when I was great, was having coaches around me who taught me a solid fundamental base. Same thing with Bill, same thing with Joe Peluzic. Like, just having that solid fundamental base. Awesome opportunity to have him on and chop it up a little bit. No lies told about the Venom Shock there.
I mean, we talk about that bowl all the time. How good
that
it is.
that's something I'm gonna have to touch back on, like great ball slash player combos. That's a topic for the off season.
It is. You know what I would have liked to ask him about, like, the urethane. I didn't get a chance to get into that conversation with him.
I think it's tough. It's all right. I thought about that too, but like, motive hasn't really been in that conversation too correct. Much, right? They haven't
purple hammer pitch black, much. Right?
Like, yeah. So I mean, I feel like asking him that question would have almost been like asking about another company's equipment, you know, not something that these guys really want to comment on anyway. So like, yeah. I didn't think it was somewhere where we needed to go. But in terms of like changes to the playing environment, being that has come into play, like definitely an interesting topic of conversation there. But yeah,
I'm going to bring this comment up from Lumber because he's asking what your opinion, the best conditions to use a Venom Shock. I think in my opinion, it's to like medium, like when they start getting a little bit medium to like dry, like when they're right around that, like right around after the transition hits, like you're not going to use the Venom Shock on the fresh, right? It's just unless you're probably EJ who could probably do it, but like you're not going to use the Venom Shock on the fresh. You're going to wait for a transition. As soon as they transition and you start having to move left when they start breaking down and you could jump like an arrow or two left, I think is the best time to like use that Venom Shock. I had one, I loved it. And then I became a patch pirate after that. And then I wasn't able to throw it anymore and I sold it off. So
I have one in my bag right now. And I would say that I like that ball on a lot of different stuff.
Use it on the fresh though, right?
I use it on the fresh. I use it on like a fresh medium pattern. I'll definitely something where I feel like I can send it to the right, and I want some strong down lane reaction even on the fresh. It's definitely an option.
It's versatile. But, don't get me wrong, but I would have better options on the fresh.
I feel like great house shot ball, amazing house shot ball, right? No doubt. And then I would say like, I find that ball to be best and most effective when there's some carry down.
Yeah, so I said about transition.
Yeah, when there's some carry down and you can really just really roll that ball, wham on it a little bit, super, super effective.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the greats. So, all right, Mike, I know we got some more stuff we want to get into.
We do. We actually have another guest that we're going to bring on. We're going double guest for the people tonight. It's funny because we've been trying to do this for like a month, and every week something comes up. It's like we either switched the show and the scheduling didn't work, or like there's something to talk about, we didn't have the time. And then I had planned this out with him for tonight, and we got it together with EJ, and he hit me up saying, oh, I guess it's not going to work out. And I said, no, it's all right. Come on anyway, because I knew, you know, we weren't going to be on for all night. So we're going to bring on somebody who's actually a regular in our chat, who's usually on the other side of the show and is in the chat chopping it up with us. And he reached out to me a couple weeks ago with a story that, you know, honestly, I just felt like when I heard the story, I felt like, no, this is something that we should have him come on the podcast and tell it himself and tell it from his perspective. So yeah, let's bring him on, Rob. None other than regular in the chat, Sweep the Rack fan, and I'm probably going to say his last name. Kevin Hebert. Am I saying it right?
You're pretty much right. It's Hebert.
Get rid of the H. Hebert. It's like French, where it's like a French last name. Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, EJ, for warming it up for me. And I feel like
tough act to follow.
Whatever the crappy show is they promote during the Super Bowl that nobody sticks around to watch, after the Super Bowl, that's me on that show.
So, Kev, welcome. Welcome to Sweep the Rack. Glad to have you, man. Thank you. From us to you, thank you for all your support of the show, because you've been around for a while here, you know, spending time with us and coming in and chopping it up. So a few weeks ago, you reached out to me with an email. We spoke on the phone, and, you know, you shared a story with me that's very personal to you. And it was something that I felt after you told me the story that was more than worthwhile of having you on and you know, telling the story yourself to the people. And if people stick around for a minute, believe me, you know, this is something you want to hear There's a really important message to be heard here. So stick around and we'll get to that. But Kev, go ahead.
Yeah. So just to kind of set things up a little bit, you know, for this, what went on, you know, grew up on junior tournaments around St. Louis, junior travel league. There was a group of us that kind of became friends, you know, we're pretty tight. And we all, you know, well, not all, but four or five of us wound up going down to Springfield, Missouri for college, Southwest Missouri State, now Missouri State at the time, both college together down there. So there was, you know, myself, Scott Krupa, Shane Gooden, Jeremy Gettle, David Jones Jr., Scott and David, they both listen to the show regularly now too. So that's cool. But, you know, after college, you know, when we kind of went our separate ways, Scott's a doctor out in Oregon. David went down to Florida. You know, Jeremy lives in Tennessee. He's a research scientist. So you got all these smart guys, you know, that that were bowlers together. But one thing that we do is we always get back together every year to bowl the Greater Ozarks Open Tournament in Springfield, Missouri. Same house where the tour stops at Enterprise Park and Sunshine. The guy that owns the bowling alleys was our coach in college. So, you know, something we look forward to every year is being able to get back together for this tournament. So this past year, May, when we're getting together for the tournament, we're down there in Springfield sitting there bowling. My buddy Scott Krupas, who I think is actually the one that reached out to Rob to tell Rob how to pronounce my name. So Scott's a doctor. And we're sitting there like bowling team event. He kind of glances down at my wrist on my right arm and he's like, "Hey, you should get that checked out." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" So I had a mole on my wrist that had been there like my whole life. But apparently there's some elements of a mole that if some things start changing, you know, need to get checked out, which at the time I was pretty ignorant to all this stuff. Didn't realize, you know, how serious, you know, things could be when you start having changes in your skin. So, I was like, okay, you know, I take it seriously and I'll look into it. And of course I can get back home dragging my feet a little bit. And then, over the summer, I hadn't bowled the summer league in like 20 years, you know, a summer league. I needed the time off, but, my buddy, Brad Pollard and his wife, Heather, they own Shrewsbury Lanes in St. Louis, which is the, actually the house that Timmy Grindler bowls out of. Tim, I think finished in the top 10 in the players earlier this year. Yeah. You know, real nice, you know, tournament there, but, bowled this league out at Shrewsbury just because I wanted to bowl out there. My dad, who used to be a pretty good bowler in his own right, you know, he riding out there to league with me a couple times just to hang out. And he's on me about this spot on my wrist. He says, "Hey, you got to get that checked out." So next week we're on the way to bowling. "Did you call the dermatologist yet?" "No, I didn't call the dermatologist." So I,
and you know, I got to stop you for a second because part of what I heard in this story is like, you're like a lot of people, you're like a lot of guys, right? Like, yeah, you should get this checked out, but you don't go, you don't take it that seriously. You delay. Oh yeah, whatever. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. Right. And I think that when you told me this story, over the phone, you know, that was one of the things that stuck with me after we talked was like, yeah, I mean, how many guys do I know that are the same way? They're like, aren't doctor guys. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm sick. I just tough it up. I do what I got to do, right? And I think that, you know, you see that a lot. So just wanted to say, you know, I can relate to that 100%. You know, I can relate to that 100%. Like, I probably have done that with my own shit too much. So definitely something that I want to highlight there for the people. But go ahead, Kev, continue.
Yeah, man, that's part of the reason why I'm telling this story is because I dragged my feet on going to the doctor. So I finally got around making an appointment with the dermatologist, which at the time I did not realize how hard it is to get in with a dermatologist and some specialists these days. It can be months and months out. One dermatologist I tried to go to was 7 months out to get an appointment, but wound up getting an appointment in November. Dermatologist says, "Yeah, we should take that spot off. You know, it definitely has some of the signs that we need to look into." Well, sure enough, it comes back as stage 2 melanoma. So I've got cancer. And at the time I didn't understand how serious skin cancer was, especially melanoma. I just thought, hey, you know, it's on your skin. If you don't deal with it for like 30 years, maybe it's bad. No, melanoma is a big deal and can move quick. So then got in with the surgical oncologist at WashU Medicine here in St. Louis, one of the top surgeons in his field. And I couldn't believe this guy's definitely never been asked this question, but I was like, hey man, after you do this, how long until I can bowl again? Because I got to go to Vegas in early March for nationals. And he was like, oh, do you wear wrist brace? You know, like he was, you know, knows nothing about bowling, but he was like kind of excited to answer the question. So told me about 4 weeks. So wound up having this surgery in late January where they went in, and you can kind of see some of the scar here. That's not the greatest right now, but
yeah, I have a picture you sent me too.
There's the picture of it right after surgery, yeah. you know, a few days nasty. After. So yeah, nasty. It's pretty nasty.
My armpit did some cutting up in there.
Lymph nodes took out. I dodged a bullet. There was nothing that made it to my lymph nodes. So that was the big deal. That's what stopped it at stage two. Otherwise it would have been more. But I just feel like I have an obligation to kind of tell this story, let people see what, you know, went on. I mean, yeah, the surgery is nasty, but you know, stage three or four cancer would be way worse. And I really owe it all to, you know, bowling, and that, you know, my buddy Scott, you know, pointed out while we were at this tournament, and then my dad kind of reinforced it on the way to stupid summer league, you know, which I never bowl. And otherwise I probably would still be just walking around with this mole that looks a little funny and, you know, could be a lot worse. But, you know, things to look for, they call it ABCDE of like basically dermatology or skin cancer. So they're looking for asymmetry, border, color, diameter, and evolving in like a mole. Those are the things. If any of those things are going on with a mole, you need to get it checked out. So, you know, if you see somebody, you know, friend, family, whatever, and something doesn't look quite normal, you know, say something, you know, let them go get it checked out, encourage them, because it could take months to get out there and do it. But, you know, it might have saved my life, man. Bowling might have saved my life in a weird way. So,
yeah. And it's funny, like those connections you make through the game.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Those connections you make through the game. Like that was another part of this story that struck me. It was like, you know, you make these connections through the game when you're a younger person. Right. And you keep in touch with a lot of those people that you make connections with through the game, and to have, you know, to have a connection that you developed, you know, through the game impact you in that kind of way, you know, is a very interesting and meaningful thing. But Rob, I'm going to throw it to you because if you follow this show for any length of time, you know, Rob is a cancer survivor as well.
You know, I am. So go ahead. I spoke to my college campus for Relay for Life because I was diagnosed with testicular cancer. And that wasn't fun. Obviously, though, I didn't have any bowling friends tell me I had it. That was self-diagnosed.
That would have been strange.
Definitely. But yeah, it's important because I was speaking to it, and it's a 1 out of every 3 or 1 out of every 4 men from the age of like 18 to like, I don't know what, but it's a very like certain age range from like 18 to 30 are diagnosed with testicular cancer. Same thing that Lance Armstrong had, but Lance Armstrong got it late and it ended up going up into his lungs because that's the progression of the body. It goes from, you know, from the testicles up to the chest. So I have experience with it. I had to go through radiation, and I was spreading the awareness. I would tell anybody out there that it's very important to check yourself. If you feel anything weird, go right to the you know, the doctor and get it looked at. So it's a really important message. I know Belmonte just had Greg Bruff, who's a college teammate of mine, talk about his cancer experience on the recent Storm show. So yeah, I mean, it's always an important message, and I appreciate Kevin coming on. And obviously, we all have, you know, ourselves or friends or family that's always been hit with cancer, and it's an important message to try to get it early. So, you know, I really think everybody needs to like kind of be aware of it and check themselves constantly.
Yeah, it's something. Like I said, it's something that it never hurts to hear a reminder of every For once sure. in a while, right? So, like, if you have an issue or you think something might be going on, you know, take the time, take the initiative, go to the doctor, get it checked out, you know, and you know, like in Kevin's case, it could be a life-saving decision to get it checked out versus not get it checked out. But Kev, how are you now? You back to bowling?
So
bowling full time? And
yeah, so that was kind of like the race against the clock on the nationals deal, you know. So January 26th was the surgery. I was leaving for nationals on the 7th of March, you know. He said about 4 weeks, so it didn't leave me a lot of ramp up time there. So I bowled a couple times before going to nationals. I let's just say Nationals was pain, misery, and depression would be a good description of my bowling this year.
Yeah, I love that.
I mean, honestly, it was partially because I wasn't sharp. You know, I hadn't been bowling.
Of course.
But who cares?
Happy to be there.
Who cares? Yeah, like, no, it's a different, right? I mean, it's a different outlook. Like, you got to be happy to be there, happy to kind of be moving on. You know, I'm sure, like, to you, it had to be sort of a marker of like, all right, I'm turning over a leaf here. You know, so that's it's great to hear. Who cares how you bowl? It's great to hear that you got to do that. That you got to go have that experience, and go bowl with your boys. You know, rather than
Dr. Scott, he was there bowling with us in Vegas. You know, the first time he got to bowl Nationals in about 12 years, so it's kind of cool, like a full circle thing of him, you know, getting to bowl again with us. So it was good deal.
Shit, drinks were on you for the week, I hope.
I did owe him. So so he definitely saved me there. But and then, you know, Nationals is just it's cool, you know. Like, I know, Mike, I think you've not really bowl regularly in Nationals, like, we gotta get you bowling, man. Like, you know,
he doesn't leave his zip code to bowl.
If you want to know why, I'll tell everybody the truth why. It's because, number one, I'm a mental case to bowl with, and no one wants to bowl with me. That's
I'll bowl with you. I think it'll be a train wreck. It'll be
no
awesome.
No one wants me on their team. I'm possibly like the worst person to have on your team because I'm that negative, and, you know, just it's not good. And number two, I don't think I'm good enough to go out there and bowl. I'm not going
Kevin,
out there.
Kevin, if he saw 98% of the bowlers bowling there.
I was just going to say. Like, if I'm going out there, I'm not going out there to just donate and give my money away and call it a vacation. Okay. Like, if I'm going out there, I want to seriously be able to compete. I'm not saying win, but compete. You know, compete like.
Well, guess what?
I'd have to look at it closer.
You have to go there to do it first.
What that means, but
yeah,
you gotta go. You gotta go do it.
No. I personally hate the tournament, and I could go on a tangent about it, but it used to be good. It's not great anymore.
I got lots of thoughts about Nationals and some of the things, the divisions. Thank God they're changing the four on a pair for singles and doubles, so it feels like you're sprinting through six games. You know, there's all kinds of things that they do goofy out there. Oh, I know what I need to tell you guys. So when I emailed you last year about the pullout game, I think you
were just going to say, this. I only want to go to play the pullout game. That's why I'll go.
So the pullout game is not happening this year. We have the spare change game this year.
Shocker. They got rid of the pullout game.
Well, I think they had to leave the board with the fist, you know, punch thing like in Reno. But, the spare change game now, they have like a randomizer on the screen when you're in the squad room for team, and it like randomizes. You think it's going to pick somebody, but it picks a lane, and then it randomizes again and it picks a team from the lane, and then it randomizes again and it picks a player from the team. You're like, oh, cool. Well, you know, Jimmy won $200, right? No, now Jimmy's got to walk up front and drop a puck down the Plinko board up front to decide how much money he gets. Except for the puck falls off the Plinko board the first three times he tries to do it. It took like 10 minutes to decide who was winning $100, you know, the squad. It was the USBC, just they can't help themselves on some of this stuff.
Plinko. How do you do a bad job at Plinko? Everybody loves Plinko.
Right.
How do you fuck up Plinko? Seriously.
Yeah. Church Carnival's been doing it for, you know, 50 years. We can't get it right with Nationals. So
Jimmy ain't trying to drop a puck. Ring and Ted in the chat. Oh,
I love it. I love the Jimmy reference too.
Oh,
that's great.
Christ. Yeah. Oh my God. That's too good. But like, no, Rob, what we should do really is we should put a Sweet the Rack team together.
We should. I've been telling you, but the problem is we can get into it, but it's not worth the travel. You're going to break out even at best at these tournament. Like, you're not like, it's not a money making tournament with the expenses nowadays to go to Reno. It's going to cost you at least over $1,000 in expenses.
Yeah.
With airfare, which now airfare to Reno is like crazy expensive. There's no nonstop directs there. You got to lay over the entry fee. The hotel, the rent a car, you better go there and split it like three or four ways with your team. That's the only way you're going to get it affordable. And, you know,
that brings up one of my biggest beefs with the tournament, too, is that the secrecy of the patterns and no streaming, and we can't let anybody see what's going on. You know, there's those of us that go in the first couple of weeks of the tournament, and not that I'm winning Eagles out there, I'm terrible or whatever, but, you know, I just tell me what four balls or five balls I need to bring on an airplane with me, you know, because you can't, you have no data. The people that bowl later in the tournament, you know, all everything's trickled down. They all kind of know what's going on. You know, it's a urethane year. It's, you know, bringing a couple big A sims, you know, whatever it might be. If you're going to make us spend $1,000 to travel across the country to the tournament, at least let us know what's going on. And then not to mention, how are you ever going to grow your tournament if you don't let people watch it? Like that, well, that's just insanity to me that you don't let people watch the bowling. It's no, don't take a video, whatever you do, you know? So anyway, I'm off on a tangent here. So
I like it.
No, yeah. It's good.
That's what we do. We go off the
rails. We love tangents about the USBC.
We love going off the rails.
One of our favorite things around here, as you well know. But Kev, listen, appreciate you coming on, bro. Important story for people to hear. You know, hope people hear that and take it to heart, take the advice. Glad to hear that you're doing well. Glad to hear that things worked out. And again, appreciate the support. You know, appreciate the support of the show and all that. You know, you've been there. You've been there from an early time on our show here. So
love the show, man. Appreciate you guys keep doing it. Like I said, I got a couple of my boys that are regular listeners now too. We sit around,
that's really all we ask for people to break it down.
We might start a podcast to break down the podcast. So, you know, hey.
The pre-show and the post-show. Like the Talking Dead. They used to do that for The Walking Dead.
Yes.
I love it.
It's amazing.
Sweep the rack. You know?
I love it. Thanks, Kevin. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. You have a good one.
You too. Yo, Kev, take it easy, bro.
Later, man.
Important message.
Man.
Again, important message. I mean, and you know. When he told me that story, I immediately was like, no, you got to come on the show and tell the story, people. Because
I lived through
it,
man.
Just knowing your background, and I know you're very
passionate about it. I just, like, sometimes forget about it because it was so long ago for me personally. I mean, I think it's almost a 20-year anniversary coming up of it in November.
Right.
So, like, it's so long ago for me that I forget even to check myself still. Because I feel like I beat it. And then that's the scary thing about that, you know, cancer is you just never know when it's going to pop up again or when it's going to pop up in general. So yeah, man, serious issue, but yeah, I love using the show as an outlet to spread an important message like that. So
true. Know. No doubt. Good opportunity for us. Let's give the people what they want, Rob.
Yes, sir. Real quick before we get into it, sorry about not being able to get to a lot of the comments tonight. The chat has been buzzing. Fire. But when you have someone like EJ on, we don't have like more than usually 45 minutes with these guys. We don't want to spend a whole lot of time. Next time he's on, we could spend time going through some comments and questions and stuff. But I don't want people to get frustrated if they're asking questions and we're not getting to it. We just want to try to get to as much as we can with EJ. He'll be back on for sure. Just wanted to throw that out. But Mike, I'm saving my worst of the week. My worst of the week is a really good one this week. I think a lot of people are going to get a good laugh out of it. So I might as well just go into it since I'm hyping it up. So the one thing I'm very excited about my worst of the week is the fact that this worst of the week got posted and it was taken down. And I love those posts because when I see a good one, I'll take a snapshot of it. And I took a snapshot of the worst of the week like 2 minutes before it got taken down. So I was all excited about it. And I even tweeted about it and people were reaching out to me and be like, oh, send it to me. I'm like, absolutely, I'll send it to you. Okay. So worst of the week is the gift that keeps on giving, the Bowling Science Forum. Just want to say that I'm not ever going to be off that message board. Okay. It's just too good. Too much stuff going on there. Tracy Lorenz. Okay. Congrats. You're getting worst of the week. You should be very happy. Go tell all your friends on Monday morning at your office. If your spare ball is so accurate, why not throw it first? I've never understood the concept of the spare ball or bringing multiple balls to the lanes. I used one ball, an average between 210 and 220 for a decade. Guys worry so much about technology. If they just learn how to bowl, they wouldn't need all of that technology. When I was a league bowler, if a guy showed up with six bowling balls, I knew I had him beat before we stepped on the lanes. I know plastic balls don't break as much as a resin ball, but if you don't break your wrist, if you don't break, oh, damn it, I lost my place. If you don't break your wrist or don't get fingers into the shot, resin balls don't break either. Just learn how to bowl. You'll save a lot of money. P.S. Do baseball pitchers get a different baseball if they want to throw a fastball, a curveball, or a slider? So I actually responded to this person. I did before I got taken down, and I'm pissed it did get taken down. I wrote, how about this? You bring your plastic ball, I'll bring my eight bowling balls, and we can bowl each other and find out who's gonna win. Because if you already have me beat, and because I've walked in with six bowling balls, then you should be able to beat me with a plastic ball, right? Because you're so accurate. So
I don't know if anything has ever been said in the bowling world that's more opposite of what it actually is than what that guy is saying.
Oh, it's completely off the rails. It's like complete. I think this is a person who grew up probably bowling in like the 60s, maybe. You know what I mean? Like before all these balls came out. And it's just one of those like real angry old timers that gets angry when they see people now coming in with their, you know, eight bowling balls, their two-handed styles. They're just the traditionalists that just get angry at any of the new technology and change in the game. And, you know, I think it's, it'll always be like that, right? I think when everybody gets old, you deal with change differently. And a lot of older people are just not prone to change like a lot of young people are. So I don't know. I just felt that was hilarious. And I'm glad I got the snap of it before they took it down. Happy St. Paddy's Day.
No, he said St. Peter's Day.
Oh, stop.
Not St. Paddy's Day.
Stop it. Another one.
Good.
Yeah.
Go Peacocks,
I hope they make another run. I like to made a ton of money betting on them.
I know. I was going to say my bank account would love that right now. Yeah. They would love that right now if they could go on another run. Okay. Worst of the week for me is from the Bowling Science Forum. It's from Steve Hollowell. Congratulations, Steve. You won Worst of the Week. Short post here. You'll all get it. Glad Lig isn't on a challenge pattern. Missing my average by 50 pins. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
It's too good. All right, wrap it up. Let's go.
Let's go. Oh, wait. Damn it. I hit the wrong button. Shit. Sorry, guys. The producing is not good.
All right, Rob, final thoughts. I got a couple.
All right, go for
it. Bowling the house counties next Saturday. Pray for me. Go Peacocks is another one of my final thoughts. Glad to get back to professional bowling. Going to need a monster bankroll for the Masters because there's just going to be a sick amount of action on Bet Rivers. I can just sense it. They're gonna do some diabolical betting arrangements. I can just see it coming. So those are the things I'm focused on.
Yeah, excited about the Masters. Excited about going there for a day or two, see some peeps.
Good luck to your brother.
Brother will be out there.
Go Jeff.
Brother will be out there. I will be not bowling, so it'll be a little bit tough for me to be there watching. But I've accepted it already and I'm over it. I'll just be happy to see some friends, see a lot of people that I haven't seen in a really long time. I don't know if we'll ever really talk about the PBA All-Star shows, to be honest with you. I'm going to preface it and say like next week when we go on, it'll be probably, I don't imagine us going on Thursday, but next Sunday.
St. Peter's is playing Thursday. I'm out.
Yeah, we're not going to be probably going. So I imagine Sunday. And I'd imagine we'd be talking more Masters than we are PBA All-Star show. Look,
we'll touch
on it. Sum it up in like, a few, yeah, I 2 minutes, really.
Yeah, when it comes down to. There's really not a lot of
reason. It's for fun. It's for the fans. It is what it is. They get some of their highest rating.
Is it for the fans? I'm not sure that it is.
Whatever it is. It's not like for, it's, the like for the hardcore
for the corporate nonsense.
Here's a good question from Rob. If I bowl Bill in match play, who are you rooting for and who are you betting on?
I'm betting on Bill, no question. Jeff.
Well, Jeff would get amazing odds, though, in the sports book.
Still, so
Jeff
on
would
Bill.
Be at least a plus like 500 easy bowling Bill. Who am I rooting for? Who am I betting? I'm not betting the match because that's just it's just not happening. I won't put you. Who am I rooting for? I will be at the bar drinking, not rooting for either one of you. Let's just put it like that. I'll just be drinking. But that's a very tough question. Everyone wants to know what Jeff's arsenal is. If you look, Jeff's a glorified patch pirate. Okay, he'll tell you all about his equipment.
Ball review patch pirate. The worst type of patch pirate. You're lucky I got so much respect and love for you, bro.
Yeah. He'll post his picture. Don't worry. He'll put it on every Brunswick message board.
He's going to tag everybody.
He was smart. He would do a video on his YouTube stream about his equipment because a lot of people want to know. So, Jeff, there's a good idea. Post your arsenal. Post some videos of you, drilling or whatever it is, and let the people give the people what they want with your arsenal. But yeah. So anyway, all right, Mike. Great show.
Roto-Wire chat mentioning that the Masters was by far the most bet on tournament in Bet Rivers last year, and yeah, likely to be even bigger this year. I would agree with that, no doubt.
Yeah. That's so Mike. Great. Mike, I will be sending Mike money.
Is this is the Masters becoming the new best week in bowling if we can bet on it? Is that like,
oh, yeah? It's the right? Problem is, yeah, it's man. I'm not a fan of the person who has to do the odds for the first round of matches because that's going to be really hard to do because there's going to be a lot of guys like they probably don't even know, juicy. You know. And I'm not going to start saying names. I don't want to ruin some good odds. I don't want to ruin some good odds for us. I know.
You know, follow on social media. We'll be putting some info out there.
I might
there.
Throw some picks out when
He's
I'm there.
He's at Brooklyn Rob 11. I'm at the 215th. We've been hot lately. Follow your people on social media. We appreciate everybody joining us tonight. Shout to EJ for the time again. Shout to Kevin for joining us as well. Shout to all of you for showing up in the chat. We greatly appreciate it. Don't be afraid to hit the subscribe button. Don't be afraid to share a word about the podcast. Let people know.
Tell your friends.
No doubt. Tell a friend. Get them to tune in. Rob, we'll see everybody next week.
See you guys.
You are now listening to Sweep the Rack podcast featuring Brooklyn Rob and Big Mike.